Well, just like Bill said, I am a little bit nervous about the presentation. I have a brain injury from the wreck. When I have a presentation, it kind of keeps me on track. So I'm going to use my notes from like 10 years ago. So bear with me, okay? I always have a backup because I know how well my brain works. I now live in Middleton, Idaho. I did live in Utah for the majority of my life. And then we moved to Wyoming and then to Idaho. My life is pretty mysterious life. When I was little, I was in a pretty dysfunctional home. Both my parents were alcoholics. I don't blame them. They were very, very sensitive like I am. They didn't know how to cope, so they drank to numb out. But when you're little, we're very pure energy, and we pick up on that energy. And I carried that energy, not understanding what happened to me. But anyways, when I was little, I would dream of a little baby boy to hold on to. And the reason why I would dream that is because my father drove drunk with us. It was something that he just did. It would scare us to death as a family. And we would ask him not to, but he continually did. And it was devastating. It was heartbreaking to be in that atmosphere. So I dreamt of that little baby boy to love, and to love him like I wanted to be loved, because I couldn't figure out how come a parent could do this at such a young age and jeopardize our life and the life of my brothers and sisters. It's very confusing. But this little baby boy that I imagined was my saving grace. He was the pivotal point for me to get through my childhood. In the alcoholic home, we also lived in Salt Lake, and so we were also the misfits of the neighborhood. We were excluded. On the most part, our neighbors did take me in and when they could and love me when they could. And I do appreciate that. And then after that, I met my soulmate, Dragging State Street. I know a lot of people here probably understand that. When we were Dragging State Street, we met and we talked. And then we got back into our vehicles. We went down a few miles more and he says, pull over again. So I pulled over. And he came up and he gave me this huge kiss. Now, I saw fireworks, and I'm not exaggerating, I did. And I just went, holy balls, what was that? I hadn't kissed too many boys in my life, so he was very the firecracker for me. And so I went home that day, and I ran it to my mother's room, and I said, I just met my soulmate. I know I'm going to marry him. And she said, oh, Lori, you're too young. That's just crazy. My maiden name's Moon, and my husband's name's Biff Boggs. There was an article in the newspaper at Valentine's, and it said, to my running Moon, love Biff Boggs. Now, there's not very many people with last name Moon, and there's not many people with Biff Boggs. My girlfriend, she called me up, and she said, did you see that in the newspaper? I go, what are you talking about? She says, Biff sent you a Valentine. So I went to the newspaper, and I saw it, and I was so elated. I called him up, and I said, thank you for that Valentine. And he goes, I didn't send that to you. Really, I didn't send it to you. So I've always known, being in the vehicle with my drunk father, that I would come out of it alive, and then these little things that would pop into my life, that there was something higher going on that I didn't understand all the time. And then a few years later, we got married. And I was so, so excited. And I'm a Cancer horoscope. And what that represents, if some of you are in astrology, and if some of you aren't, I will educate you. But Cancer is the sign of mother. And that's all I wanted to do was be a mother. I didn't want to be a professional. I didn't want to do that. I just wanted to be a mother. Children are pure, just like Jesus said. They have a pure heart. And they really, really educate us. So my dream was to always be a mother. So we got married, and the first year of marriage, and plus we had, I'll be honest with you, we had intercourse before we were married. So there wasn't any birth control going on here, and I never got pregnant. So now it's going on about 3 or 4 years, and I'm not pregnant yet. And I'm like, what is going on? We decide to go to the military doctors because we were in Colorado Springs now. We moved there. And they told me that my right ovary wasn't working and they wanted to do surgery on it to remove it so my left ovary would work and so I would get pregnant that way. So in my naivety, I said, okay, I'll do it. I'll do anything to have a baby. So I went in and 3 days after surgery, my stomach started blowing up. I called the nurse and she kind of pushed me away and I said, you better get in here. I'm having a lot of pressure. And she came in, and she says, oh, she called Cold Blue. She put me in a wheelchair and got me sent into surgery in this little room, and they started ripping my staples out while I was under anesthetic. And it was hell. It was so painful. I screamed at the top of my lungs. And all this blood came squirting out all over the doctors. And I could hear the doctor say, holding on to my artery, saying, oh, dang, the doctor cut an artery, and he shouldn't have. So I almost bled to death. And then I had to heal from the inside out. They could not sew me back up again. I was about 8 inches deep and 8 inches wide. My husband had to pack me every day, and I had to wear a saran wrap around my stomach. So it was a pretty horrendous experience. I really wish I would have had a near death then, because it probably would have made things a little easier on me. But I didn't. So after that, I was expecting to get pregnant, but it never happened. It was very aggravating, and if anybody's gone through infertility in here, it's a very, very, very painful experience. We moved back to Utah because my mother was dying of emphysema, and we saw an infertility specialist here. And they said I would never get pregnant. I was allergic to my husband, and he didn't have enough semen to get me pregnant. And it was devastating. That was my dream, and I felt like a failure. Then they said, let's go ahead and do some more surgery because you have endometriosis. So I went ahead and had surgery after surgery done in the years, year after year after year. And I accepted I wasn't going to get pregnant. Then I went on a job interview, and there was a magazine article. And this is back in the day, you know, where alternative medicine wasn't really heard of. And it said, to get pregnant, men take zinc and women take Robitussin. So I came home all excited. I went and bought some Robitussin and got some zinc and said, let's try it. What do we got to lose? We've done everything else. So we went ahead and I gave my husband a zinc and I drank Robitussin every night. And I got pregnant. I was so excited. It was like, there is a God, right? I was so excited, and we carried for about 4 weeks, and I started spotting. And I was devastated. I ended up having a miscarriage. But I was so happy that I got pregnant. So I kept looking for the positive, thinking, you know what? At least I got pregnant. I can try again. I'm not going to give up, because I knew that baby boy was there waiting for me. I knew it. So I tried again. We didn't never give up. And this time we did artificial insemination, and you know, I have to call my husband up and do the ovulation timer, and you know, we did it all. And I got pregnant again. And this time we were ecstatic. We knew this was it. We knew this was going to be it. And I started spotting again. The doctor got me in right away and said, let's have an ultrasound done. Because now I'm 8 weeks, I think. So he said, let's do an ultrasound. So we did an ultrasound, and the nurse just says, I'm sorry, you've lost this baby again. We were just brokenhearted. It was in the room where the nurses were with their babies and the rocking chairs, you know, and we have to be in that environment with here we are miscarrying again. So I just about gave up, and I was very angry at God at this point in time in my life. I have some tantrums in my life, and that was one of them. And so I had a tantrum, and I heard, don't give up. So I didn't. So I said, okay, I'm going to try one more time because I heard, don't give up. I didn't give up. And we got pregnant. And we had Preston on June 25th, 1991. He was 8 pounds and 3 ounces. He was a miracle to us. It was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had, is giving birth. Now, it wasn't something I expected. I wanted the anesthetic, but it didn't work, so it was all natural. Didn't tell me it was going to be as painful as it was, but it was real worth it in the long run. It was just an amazing, amazing experience to have him after everything that we'd been through. But what that created was a bond for us, a big, thick bond. I know what happens when the heart gets broken over and over and over again is it cracks and you go deeper, and it cracks and you go deeper, and as you go deeper, you get more sustained and Mother, Father, God energy. And with that sustainment is where unconditional love comes in and the bond. We had a very, very strong bond. But I was a little nervous. I was stressed out. I wasn't sure how to be a mother. I was 28. You know, I basically wanted to put him in a box and put him back in my closet like I was a little girl. And I'm like, okay, Lori, you know, you're not a little girl anymore. And then I started thinking of my parenting skills. I didn't want to be like my parents. And so I went ahead and I took a class on parenting. And I was taught to tell our children, they're on top, in tune, and in touch. So as soon as Preston turned 5, every day, 10 times a day, I would tell him, Preston, you're on top, in tune, and in touch. And he would. He was like the cat's meow for everybody. He knew he was on top, in tune, and in touch. When he walked in that room, everybody knew it. He just had that kind of mannerism. And I'm not just saying that because he's my son. I'm just saying that because it's true. And if their pictures were there, you probably understand the magnetism that he does have. Because he's really not my child anyways. He's mother and father's. Being with the joy of him and experiencing this joy, and so we went to SeaWorld and we were on the well, and you know, it's just everything that I had ever dreamed of. Going to movies, I would just sit there and cry because this is my dream come true. I mean, every time I was with Preston, it would be a dream come true. Well, when Preston turned about 5, I started having premonitions that he was going to die. It was really, really scary. I had no one to turn to because I didn't want to be labeled as schizophrenic, and I didn't understand why it was happening. But they weren't like fearful messages, they were like knowing messages. Don't buy that coat, by the time he's 8, he won't wear it. I didn't understand. It would come out of the blue. And it was very, 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 very hard. I think I probably went insane, if you want to know the truth, when I look back at it. And what happened was, I was trying to save his life, which any mother would. And I started to drink to cope. I did what my parents did. And I thought, you know, if I could just turn out these messages, he'll be okay. And so I drank. And sometimes the messages would go away, and sometimes they got stronger. But I kind of went into a little bit of insanity, I would say, craziness, trying to save his life, because I just had so much fear driving me on some end. So then we moved from Salt Lake City to Worland, Wyoming. And Preston had just turned 8. Before we moved, Preston would come home and cry. He was very, very sensitive. He was a cancer, too. He would come home and cry and say, Mommy, please, Mommy, can we just please take care of... I can't remember the little boy's name now. I think it was Matt. Can we please just please take care of Matt? His mom and dad, they don't like him. He's always crying at school. He needs help, and he needs your love. Please, Mommy. And I'd say, Preston, you know, maybe one day we can foster... Because I didn't think I would ever conceive again. And I didn't want to give that hope to him if I didn't. And then my husband was also diagnosed with multiple sclerosis a year before Preston was born. So there was a lot of stress in my world with that. And then I ended up getting fibromyalgia on top of it because of all the stress. We moved to Worland, Wyoming, and we found this beautiful, beautiful home. And I knew my premonitions were real because I told my husband, the home we're going to find is going to have these teapots all over in the kitchen, in the living room. I don't know why, but that's just what I know. So anyways, we ended up checking out Worland, Wyoming, and we found the house of our dreams, and it was up on a hill with the Bighorn River behind us, and it was on 2 acres, and it was on farmland, and it was beautiful. If you people know what grounding is, but grounding is really an anchor to Mother Earth. I didn't know that's what I needed, to be anchored to her back then. But I knew it was part to do with the dirt. So I know I wanted dirt. I wanted to be anchored to the dirt, but I didn't understand it. So we bought this 2 acres, and it just had dirt on it. It didn't have grass. But it was a beautiful, beautiful home. We were ecstatic, and we were so excited. And I thought, yes, I'm going to save his life. He is going to be saved. We're going to get out of Utah, because Utah started, I could feel the people coming here. Believe me, you guys have grown a lot since I've been here. But I could feel y'all coming here. I'm like, I got to get out. That's just because I'm sensitive. I like to be out in nature and kind of have my space, because I absorb and pick up energy. Anyways, when we went to Wyoming, just that beautiful, beautiful house. And we were so excited. We had moose there. In our backyard, we had frogs, and we had deers, and we had rabbits, and Preston had never even seen a frog. It was just great to see this, to see him so happy with his frogs, and we had a wonderful, wonderful time we were there, but the energy started getting more intense for me. I thought it was going to stop, but it didn't. It got more intense, and I'm like, what is going on here? And I kind of had a lot of fear with my husband's multiple sclerosis, too. We just moved there. We're in this house. I have fibromyalgia. And there was just kind of a lot of insecurity going on in my world. And there was also, I started putting 2 and 2 together. I'm like, wait a minute. I feel like I'm back in time. Because my father had took us to Yellowstone way back when I was heavily imprinted with drunk driving in Wyoming. I thought, wait a minute. this is kind of full circle. This is kind of weird. And I even shared the story when my father took us on the trip and he put us in the back of the trailer and drove off. And it was a horrendous experience for a child. So anyways, I was starting to feel this energy getting more intense. So what did I do? I started drinking more because that's all I knew to cope. And so I drank, and one day, my husband and I got in a fight. And we never fought, especially around Preston. We did not want him to be in that environment. We knew that from the get-go. But you know what? Sometimes when you drink, you do things that you don't want to do. And that's what happened. And so I drank. If I was in his face or something, and he pushed me, and I fell down. I was really mad at him. And when you're an alcoholic, you're a victim, an archetype. And so I blamed him. It was all his fault. And so I got up and I said, come on, Preston, we're going to go. We're getting out of here. And I promised myself I would never, ever drive with Preston. And I never did for the 8 years, ever. We got in the car and I drove about less than a mile. And I could hear Preston say, Mommy, you know, why is going on with you and Daddy, you know? You know, I'm like, wait a minute, he's in the car. What am I doing? You know, it's like I came out of my trance and I woke up. I turned around the car, I took him back, I tucked him in, and I woke up with a horrible hangover the next day. And Preston said, in his beautiful, beautiful, pure energy, and he looks up at me the next day and he says, Mommy, what happened last night? Why did you and Daddy fight? I've never seen that before. And I said, oh, Preston, I'm just under so much stress. But you know, I didn't tell him the truth. I was sick. I was very sick. And so at that time, I knew when I drank with my beautiful child, I needed help. So I went to my husband and I said, you know, I'm an alcoholic and just like my parents, I need help. And he's like, oh, being the codependent man he is. No, you don't. Just drink one glass of wine a day. You'll be fine. I'm like, okay, tell you what I did do. Because I do believe in God and I always have. I'd wake up and I'd pray. And I'd get on my hands and knees. I'd say, please keep Preston safe, God. Please keep him safe, because I knew that's what I could do for him. So a few days later was my birthday, July 19th, and I went out and I got really, really drunk. My husband, he drove me home. And then I just thought, you know, I just got to quit doing this. And I was really thinking about this. And I had all this fear and all this energy about it, but I was scared, really scared. A few days later, the energy lifted. And I looked at Preston and I said, Baba, don't leave me, sweet pea. Please don't leave me. He didn't say anything. He just looked at me like nothing. He didn't say, Mama, I won't leave you. He just looked at me and didn't say a word. One thing Preston always told me is, he'd say, Mom, if you don't know the answer, always go to your heart because it's always there. So that's what I did. I said, God, I surrender this to you. It's too big for me. It's way too big for me. A few days later, July 24th, they don't have the Pioneer holiday there, so it wasn't a holiday there. But we went to Riverton, Wyoming, which is about 2 hours away. Worland, Wyoming's a town of 5,000. Riverton's a town of 10,000. But at least they have a Walmart and a Kmart there. For the other store we have, it was a Vermida, and there was always nothing there. We needed some stuff for our new house. So we went shopping, and it was in the daytime. I always made it conscious not to drive with Preston on the weekend nights, because I know that's when most of the drunk drivers are out. And so anyways, we went down, and it was a beautiful, beautiful drive, and I had my Honda. Our other vehicle, our Jimmy, was the wheel was broken. And so we drove that to haul everything in. We had a wonderful day shopping at Kmart. We did some school shopping for Preston while we were there. We went out to lunch at Wendy's, and we had a great day. I made one stop, the liquor store. I wasn't ready to quit. The energy lifted. I wasn't ready. We went to the bar, Preston and Biff were in the car. I went to there and I could feel the energy, and it was just like this energy that I was so used to and so familiar with from my childhood. It felt almost comforting to me. It was strange. Got my wine, got in the car, and I'd always have to drive because I had to be in control because of the trauma I had driving with my parents. And my husband was okay with that. He'd rather have me do that than be a backseat driver anyways. So I drove, and Preston was in the back seat, belted in, and we had just put on this CD, and it was called You Are a Woman, and Preston was singing out loud and laughing, and it was a beautiful song, you know, about women being beautiful, and Preston was, he was a prankster, so he was having fun with it. And we're driving, and it's on a two-way highway. Speed limit 65 miles an hour. I cheat a little. I usually go 67 or 70, so I don't get a ticket. So anyways, I was going about 67, and this white truck was in front of us. However, on the other side of the highway, I noticed a bunch of people pulled over. I'm like, I wonder why he's pulling over. I wonder why they're all pulling over. So I said to my husband, why do you think they're pulling over? And he goes, I don't know, maybe somebody had a blowout up the road. And I said, yeah. In a flip second, that white truck that was in front of us moved over, and all of a sudden, this car comes straight for us. It's 4:30 in the afternoon. And I'm thinking, what's he doing? Coming straight for us. And it was like, it was a path of destruction. And that's how I explain it in my book. And so I move over. I mean, I don't got very much room. I'm going about 67. There's not a lot of time. So I move clear over, thinking, here, you can have it. And I'll just move over. Well, he follows me. So everywhere I went, he was following me. So we did this dance for about 2 seconds. And boom, we were clobbered. We were hit head on. In a second, this angel came down and said, remember this. And I'm like, what in the hell is that? Blew me away. I've never seen anything like it before. And I'm like, okay, I've got to remember it. I'll remember it. I got to remember this. So you're in such shock and trauma, you're just not worried about yourself. You're more worried about everybody else around you. Then Preston said to Biff, Daddy, what happened? And I'm like, oh, he's alive. I felt so glad that he was alive. I was so happy. I was like, yes, he's alive. Thank goodness. And I looked down at the car and I'm like, oh my holy crap. The car came clear up to the top of my legs. I was molested by my own vehicle. And I was. I could not move. I could not even turn around to see if my little boy was okay. All I could do was trust that he was. My husband, the windshield exploded and the shard took and peeled off his scalp. So when I saw him, he was a bloody mess. At that point in time, we had people circling around our car, going crazy. I did quit smoking 7 years prior to that, but a woman did come up and put smoke in my face, tempting me again, and I just like, no, I'm not doing it. But believe me, I thought I did want to again, but I didn't. And I said no, but she was very, very panicked and very, very upset. And I do remember that. And then they came and took Biff out of the car. Well, I couldn't move because the car was on top of me. It took them 45 minutes to get me out of the car. While I was in the car, the paramedic, I says, my legs, I don't think I'm going to walk again. And he says, no, he says, I'm pretty sure you're going to walk again. Just hold on to that, Lori. And I said, okay. I said, what about my son? He's okay, Lori. Your son and your husband is okay. Okay. So that's all I had to worry about was just me. And a nurse jumped in on the passenger seat and started taking off my wedding rings. Started taking off all my rings because I was starting to swell up so bad from being hit on. Then the jaws of life came and got me out of the car. And that was very, very, very scary too. You really have to trust these people and paramedics and EMTs. I have a whole other conscience for what they do out there. They got me out of the car 45 minutes later. The other people in the car was the drunk driver, his girlfriend, his little boy, 8, and his little girl, 6. And they were killed. I didn't know this. They didn't tell me this till after. They got me in the vehicle, in the ambulance, and they started cutting off my bra. I was really mad because I just spent $50 for that bra. And I'm like thinking, what are you doing that for? Don't do that. I mean, that's where my mind was. Kind of interesting when I think about that. It wasn't really on survival. It was about my bra. I mean, what's that about? After they cut my bra off and stuff, the pain was so excruciating that when I looked down at my legs, I looked like I'd been through a meat grinder. I was in so much pain, and I just was asking for some pain medicine. They said, no, you're too unstable. And I said, okay. And the next thing I know, I was just passed out. I went out cold. The pain was way too much. Finally, on an unconscious level, finally, I'm out of pain. Now I'm in the Riverton Hospital, and I'm feeling this excruciating pain coming out of my abdomen. And I'm feeling like a chicken being plucked or being raised for dinner. You know when you clean a chicken out? And I'm like, what is going on here? And I can't talk because I'm intubated. And I just want to scream because I'm in so much pain. And so I went like this with my hands asking for help. And they said, look, she's having a spasm. Not only has she been through this horrific regret today, but she's lost her son. And that's how I found out Preston was killed. Through the extreme pain of them removing my spleen without anesthetic, and now hearing Preston was killed at the same time, I said, God, I can't take it anymore. No more. Help. I need help now. Boom. I was out of my body, and it was so refreshing because there was no map needed. If you knew me, I don't follow directions very well. So I'm just like, pain body is gone after that fibromyalgia. And I was like out, floating in this magnificent, bluish, bright fuchsia color, entangled together. More exhilarating than anything we've ever seen on this earth. And so I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. Now, losing Preston wasn't even there for him. That thought wasn't even there. So I was just enjoying what I was seeing. I was like, in awe, this is so beautiful. So of course it was the tunnel, like so many people have talked about. And there was the light. And then it was like this big door opened. I mean, it was like a big brown door opened up. And I just went right on in. I just floated right in. But we didn't have bodies. We were light, like solar light. And I go in, and there's Preston and God. And I'm looking at him going, what's going on here? And God shows me this film strip of all this fear I had with Preston dying. Because when you have premonitions of your child dying, you're thinking, is it going to be the kidnapping? Is it going to do this? Is it going to be that? He's showing me all the fear. I didn't understand it. I just went, yeah, so. And then Preston, I'm like, I don't care. I want him back with me. I'm arguing. And God said, no, there's no way he can come back with you. He's no longer safe here on this earth. I said, no, I want him here. I don't care what it takes. I'll change his diapers till he's 100. I don't care. I want him back with me. And then they showed me a picture of Preston. And he would be in a vegetative state if he wasn't back in his body. And Preston said to me, Mommy, I don't want to go back in that body. And I knew at that point it was going to take more love to let that child go than it was to hold on to him. So I said, okay, I understand. And I hugged him in this bright, beautiful, golden ball of light. We all came together and God took Preston to his heart and said, and he hugged me and he said, Preston is in the safest place there is. My prayer was answered, but not in the way I thought it should be. And I said, okay. They said, you've got work to do. And I said, okay, quite understand it. And Preston it was kind of a telepathic talk. It was kind of like, Mom, if you die now, you can't be with me. So go do some work so we can be together. I'm like, okay, and I didn't understand it. You know, I'm like, I don't understand what the hell you're talking about, but okay. So I went down, I went out of that portal, and the next thing I know, I'm like being slammed back into my body, and it just feels like I'm putting on a pair of shoes that are two sizes too small. And it hurt, and I was angry. I'm in the helicopter being life-lighted. I can smell blood, and I am like, what's going on? And then I passed out again, and I went into a coma. And I woke up for a little bit and wrote my husband a letter, they say, so we're going to be okay, so he could get through. Because he just lost his child, and now I'm touch and go. They don't think I'm going to make it. Not only did I almost die from the wreck, but now I have a systemic yeast infection from the antibiotics because the first hospital didn't clean up my legs. Well, they thought I was going to die when they lifelighted me to Casper, Wyoming, so I got a very, very bad infection in my legs. The injuries were horrific. I'm going to read those because I can't ever remember all of them. Shattered legs, 7 severe open leg fractures, many broken bones, including toes, ankles, fibula, ribs, clavicle. I have an eye socket that broke. I have shattered teeth. I have about 14 root canals and caps, and a ruptured spleen, a lacerated liver, my brain injury, collapsed lungs, and I underwent a tracheotomy, craniotomy, and orthopedic surgery. And I lost 11 pints of blood. That's why the anesthetic didn't work in that first hospital, because I lost so much blood. You need blood to carry the anesthetic, and I found out that later. And then my husband almost died. He had 2 broken legs and then a C-belt and ruptured colon. And so he almost died from the colon. Preston died of a torn aorta. When I was touch and go, they really thought they were going to lose me. And I had another near-death experience. And this time I was in ICU. I just remember the nurse waking up and hitting me across the face. She was hitting me, telling me to wake up, wake up, wake up. And I was so angry with her because that near-death was totally different than this other near-death. It was like cosmos energy, like being out in the universe and just floating with the stars. It was just like, ooh, brilliant. But there was peace, total peace. There wasn't any noise. It was like, finally, this is the moment I've been waiting for. And here she is slapping my face to wake me up. And so I was so angry with her. Oh, I was angry with her. I did not want to come back. I was very angry with her. And then when I did come back, after 18 days in a coma, the first thing I heard, I'm sitting there in the hallway, I remember, and I'm like, you know, I had my trach in me, you know, and I don't know what hit me. And all of a sudden I see this little like light, and there's orbs now. I don't know if you see them in the pictures. But there was like a dot, and I'm saying, what is that? Hi, Mom, it's me, Preston. Bubba, what are you doing here? Mommy, it's going to be okay. I'm here with Grandma and Grandpa, and I'm going to teach you to be light, love, and free. And I said, oh, okay. And I was so close to him that I was like okay with it, but I didn't understand what was going on. While I was in the coma, what happened too is they told me I was going to be so brain damaged that I was going to need a caretaker for the rest of my life. And they told me I would never walk. Now, Preston came to me and said, Mommy, don't buy that. You're not going to walk again. Now, believe me, the brain injury and the brain damage is a little true. Believe me, at this point, it is true. But walking, Preston said, Mommy, don't buy that. Don't buy that thought. Don't. You will walk again, and you're going to walk into my funeral. And I'm going to make sure you do. I'm going to cheer you on. I was 70 days in the hospital. I did go to Preston's funeral on the 45th day. And I did walk in it with a walker. But during that time in the hospital, there was another near-death that I'll explain. And it was a little different near-death. I was in the astral realm with Preston. And the astral realm was an amazing experience. When I was in the coma. And what it was is it's this beautiful, vibrant, you know how beautiful the mountains are? With the flowers blooming and in springtime. But the difference is, because we're at such a high vibration, you can see the vibration of everything. So you can see the vibration of the color. You can see the vibration of the wind. You can see the vibration. It's very, very fascinating. It's hard to put into words. And anyways, we were going down these hills, these big long hills, laughing in this grass with these two new puppies. It was just fun to hear him laugh, you know, that child's laugh that just just brings your heart open, you know. And we were just laughing down the hill, going down the hill laughing. When I came out of the coma and they were trying to tell me he's killed, I'm like, there's no way he can be killed. I was just with him. And they said, no, he isn't. I said, I was just with him with his puppies. And the reason why I'm saying this is about, 30 days later, I was going through rehab, and they wouldn't let any of my friends call me because they didn't want to overstimulate me with my brain injury, but one friend got through. And her story is, she had infertility problems too. And her son was born a month after Preston on my birthday. So we all hang out. We kind of were a groupie, you know. We'd gone through the pain of miscarrying and infertility and stuff. And we just knew how precious our kids were. She called me. And her little boy's name was Cole. And she said, I want you to know, Lori, that Cole is making me call you. And he said, Preston came to him. And he wants you to know he loves his new home. He loves playing basketball with all his new friends. He loves being with Grandma and Grandpa. But he especially loves his new two puppies. Now, Cole and Penny are in Utah. They have no clue what's going on in Wyoming. They don't know that when this experience with Preston. They have no clue. And the reason why I'm sharing that experience is such a beautiful mystery of how these things happen. That's what's made me so sustained, is to know there's so much more than this earth. There's so much more to life. We have so much to explore here and to understand and get out of the programming and to get out of the conditioning and to really use our heart intelligence. And that's really what I believe my experience is about, is to help that. And that's why I wrote my books, Hitting Fear Head On and 18 Steps to Transforming Grief, so that we look at things to expand our consciousness, so we are more tapped into Mother and Father God, so that we're more sustained in their field and not in the external field. The internal field is where it's all at. Our own heart is where it's at. With Preston, I have after-death communication with him now. He has taught me to be light, love, and free, and that's what my title of my book is, Hitting Fear Head On, The Keys to Be Light, Love, and Free. What he does is he gives me white whispers, and he calls them white whispers because he says they're from the heart of God, and they're pure whispers. And I will share you one whispered with what he wrote so you can understand the beauty where my son is. And how come now I can be okay with this, and I can say losing my son is the best thing that happened to me? Because I am so connected to him now that if he would have been the physical, we probably wouldn't have been as connected as we are now. And he has taught me more here on being on the other side than here. It wouldn't have happened that way. So I know on some way we contracted in so that I would wake up and come out of the trance that I was heavily in and wake up the pattern of my DNA family. And I know that's what happened. And I'll share this, and I've got to share the drawing that Preston drew too before the day before the wreck. So this is one of his messages that he wrote. Coming home is as beautiful as birth, because we are born again into the hands of God. It's just a transition. Death serves to plant the seeds of growth and awakening those left behind. By truly looking deep into our hearts, we will see that life is not a tragedy. Everything serves a purpose for the highest good. Our growing spirits will one day fly along the majestic mountains of inner peace. And I believe that, and that is such a high saying for a little 8-year-old boy to come through to me. And the picture that he drew before he was killed, it was a picture of our house in Worland, Wyoming, with the acreage, and there was two people in the clouds. There was a crown, which was God, and a little boy holding a ball, and Preston loved balls. And the sun, and an eagle outside the cloud, and then our house, three little mountains, our house on top, and the Bighorn River behind us with a shark going the opposite way. When I got the picture, he had been sat at a neighbor's house the day before the wreck. And when she heard the wreck on the radio, she went to the room that Preston was playing in. She actually had thrown the picture in the trash and pulled it out and went, "Oh my gosh, I've got to get this to Lori and Biff." And she had it framed for us when I got out of the hospital, which was 70 days later on our 16th wedding anniversary. And she had it framed for us. And in this frame, you could tell that he knew he was going to go to heaven. There was no doubt. And so about a year later, I said, "Bubba, what are you trying to tell me?" And he says, "Mom, soar high like the eagles, like me and God. And stay out of the illusion of fear, or the sharks will eat you alive." And to this day, my son shows up in the spirit of eagles. And it happened right after the wreck, where eagles were flying over me, were in my space I didn't understand until I saw a shaman. A lot of experience were happening to me I didn't know. And so I had to seek outside help, just like now, here, being here. I had to seek outside help. And so that's what he explained, that, you know, Preston shows up in the spirit of eagles. And so that is my 3 near-death experiences in a roundabout way. I hope that you were able to use your imagination without the pictures. But I'd like to know if you have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your story. It was so uplifting.
Thank you.
That must take a lot of courage.
Thank you.
So when you saw God, was it Heavenly Father or was it Jesus?
For me, it wasn't Jesus. I felt like Jesus was holding space for the whole thing. So Jesus was like the holder for me, but God was like a universe or a source, is what it felt like to me. It was like this universal, glorious, all everything. It was like all of us together in one big ball is what it felt like. Our light together. If you want my religious background, I was baptized LDS, but I was baptized LDS because I had to cope. If I wasn't accepted, the kids were very mean to me because I wasn't LDS. So I became baptized so that I would be accepted. I didn't know what to do. In that time period, I did go to church a few times, a handful of times, but it was very hard for me because they didn't want to sit by me because I smelled like cigarette smoke, and it was very painful for me. So I only went a handful of times. And then I went to a Catholic church. That didn't agree with me either. And then Unity Spiritual Center came here, and I went there, and that felt pretty good to my heart. And they have Jesus-based teachings, which I highly believe in Jesus-based teachings. And then we went to a Christian church in Worland, Wyoming. A pretty interesting experience that I didn't want Preston in. The pastor was up at his podium, and these people walked in, and they had already low self-esteem, you could tell, and kind of hunched over, and they sat down, and he got out the Old Testament and the ruler and started telling them they were sinners. And my heart was breaking, and so I went up to him afterwards and said, "What are you doing? You know, this hurts me. This hurts." And he said, "You know, I'm doing what, you know, they say to do." And I'm like, no, do this. And my husband was pulling my skirt, trying to get me out of here. And I was like, "No, you don't do this to people." And then I got in the car with Preston, and I said, "You take all that out. Don't even listen to any of that stuff, because that hurt my heart way too bad." So that was my experience in church. And then after my experience, after this, the drunk driver was a Native American. And so I wanted to know his heritage and have an understanding of how you could drive drunk with your children in this day and age. And so I was really confused about it, but then I understood, because look, I did too. But I just caught myself, thank God. But I wanted to know his heritage. And really, the Native American is probably one of the most beautiful spiritualities I've ever came across. It was very beautiful. I did a few sweat lodges that you clean out your system, you get pure, and then you get very, very connected with Holy Spirit and Jesus and whoever's in your life. And then I also did Vipassana meditation, and that's a 10-day silent retreat where you meditate for 11 hours a day for 10 days. And I've done that 8 times now. Meditation purifies your energy all the time. And because of that, I was doing it because of pain. I didn't do it for religious issues. I did it because when I would do it, I was very connected to Preston. I mean, last time I did it, he showed me how to fly on my back. Because what happens is your energy gets so pure that you're just very translucent. And so he said, okay, Mommy, I'm going to be the wings behind you, and you're going to finally fly with me. And that was my last experience with him when I did Vipassana, because your energy is so clear. So I got to fly with my son. And it was amazing, but it was only because my energy was so clear after meditating 11 hours a day. So it takes work. It is not, it's a very, very, most people say it's very intense, and it is intense, but it's something that I really love because I love to be that close to my son. And if I have to do that to be that close, I will. That's just what a mom does. Is there any other questions?
Yes, I was wondering, with your husband, Biff, how has he been able to relate with all this, and has he found any connection?
Biff and I have had a lot of marital problems, I'll be honest with you. Biff, he smoked pot before, and we were on the edge of divorce then, because I was just so livid that he'd want to smoke pot with Preston. You know, we go camping, I mean, I was just livid with him, and so we did have a lot when we came into that. And then after the wreck, he started smoking pot pretty heavily and drinking pretty heavily. When I came out of the coma, what happened to me, and his dad came in, and we drank quite a bit, I loved red wine, and he said to me, you know, I can't wait till we can drink again. And I said, I am never going to drink again, ever, 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 and I haven't. You know, the wreck was in 99, July 24th, 99. And so with Biff, he did. That's how he was coping, and he got fired from his job for smoking pot. With my visions, he thought I was crazy. Preston saved my life. I was on Vioxx, and Preston told me to get off the Vioxx. That was an inflammatory for my legs, and he says it's going to kill me and give me a heart attack. I came home, and I was throwing it away, and Biff goes, what are you doing? I says, I got to throw this away, and he says, why? I says, Preston says it's going to give me a heart attack. He said, oh, Lori, and he went and took the medicine. Well, 3 or 4 years later, there it was. They said they're going to give you a heart attack. So, you know, my son has saved my life a few times now. And so he's had a really hard time coping with my intuition and my brain injury, because what happened with the brain injury and what happens with a lot of brain injuries is we lose our logic. We don't have much logic. So like my directions, I have a hard time with accounting. I have a hard time with anything logic. But my intuition is wide open. I'm just like wide open. And so he's had a little bit of a hard time with that. He did go to Vipassana with me. I was 1 year. I was hoping that would help. He didn't really like it. He's more of an addicted-based guy as far as he started doing biking, you know, with his MS, and did that a lot. And now this last 2 years, he's had a bad MS attack to where he can't ride his bike anymore. And I help him and support him, but it's his soul saying, you know, it's time to let go of all the external and go deep inside and find the truth. Because we can run from it, but you know what? We all have to do it one way or the other. We've got to come down to what the truth is for our own souls. Now, we do nonviolent communication. I don't know if you've heard of that. It's a great skill for everybody to learn. That's a skill that brings out the emotion of people, because that's what keeps our energy system stuck. Our heart blocks. So when we know nonviolent communication, it's an excellent, excellent skill for children. We do that weekly, and that keeps us very intimate on a very intimate, not sexually, but open heart and very honest with each other, instead of appeasing energy or anything like that, because that's when a marriage gets into trouble. There's a book, and oh, forgive me, I can't remember the author's name right now. Thank you. Yes, Marshall, yes.
I understand you've tried several different churches.
Yes.
And now, have you ever heard of Betty Eady's Embraced by the Light?
I have.
I would say her experience is more or less the Mount Everest,
right,
of near-death or out-of-the-body experiences. Based upon her experience, she says that the reason there are so many different religions and churches in the world is that they fill people's various spiritual needs,
right,
based upon their level of spiritual development.
Absolutely.
Do you agree with that based,
absolutely,
upon your experience, and that no one has any business knocking someone else's
absolutely, I do.
Cherished religion, church, or belief.
Absolutely.
They fail us at various levels of spiritual development.
Absolutely. I agree. Absolutely. Because to me, there's many paths, and there's no wrong or right path. And so, you know, back to the LDS church, I would have been a foster child if it wasn't for the LDS church. Because when my mom quit drinking, my mom and dad were divorced. My mom was 6 house payments behind and no food in the house. She went to the House of Hope, and our bishop paid for the house payments so we didn't have to be fostered. The LDS church has been a root for me, and LDS people, what I have found, are more open. They understand energy more. They understand Reiki. They understand how we can heal ourselves with energy. But some of the Christian bases, and I'm not knocking anybody, it's just what my experiences I've had. There's something in the Bible, I don't even know where it is or what it is, but they get scared with the energy about having after-death communication, and they think it's the devil because they don't understand. Now, I know the devil would not, Preston is no way the devil because he was saving my life. I mean, the devil wouldn't do that. You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense to me. So anything that does not resonate with me and my heart, I have to go with my own heart says. But if that's okay with them, that's okay. I honor them too, wherever they're at. So you're absolutely right, sir.
Well, I believe the word of wisdom was given to us by a Heavenly Father for the sake of our physical health, not to judge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, if you know, I'll go a little deeper here because he's taken us deeper, so I'll go deeper. So obviously the audience is ready for this. So what happens when we judge is it plugs up the heart. And God is not allowed to intervene. Or Jesus, whoever it is. I don't want to get semantics in the way here. So when we can hold space, and let's say, you know, we see a politician and we know they're being deceptive, when we know that they're lying, instead of being angry and upset, we hold our heart space and we anchor the energy into Mother Earth and we just open up that heart. And what happens is it allows God to intervene and to come in and dissolve that energy. So that it's no longer on the planet. Because we're all one, and we're all each other. And when we can have love and compassion and understanding for each other, and unconditional love, just like Jesus taught, that's the key.
Hi again, I echo everyone else's comments. Thank you for telling your story. It's very, very enlightening. It seems like at this point you have this ability to communicate with your son. Is this something that did you have any of this prior to your near-death experience? In other words, I've heard some stories around people who've had near-death experiences and then they now have sort of this higher level of intuitive ability to sort of...
I believe we all have this intuitive level. I think that what's happened is it's been blocked by armor on the heart. So I think that we've all had it. Yes, I did have intuition. Did I have it as much and as expanded? No. But I was a pretty intuitive person then. But did I do after-death communication or anything like that? No. My mother did die. There were some interesting things that happened with her, and I did predict when my dog was going to die the day. And I've had some things like that. I don't know if it's a prediction or if it's just God saying, be ready for this. But I believe we all have the capability of after-death communication. We all have the capability of talking to our own source. We all have the capability of being very, very intuitive. And it's all heart intelligence when we understand the heart intelligence. It's understanding emotional intelligence.
So you've had so many premonitions beforehand and afterwards, and these three NDEs, obviously. So I'm curious, have you ever had a premonition about a future event that eventually unfolded, but not in the way that your premonition suggested that it would?
I haven't. I had a premonition with 9/11. I knew that was going to happen. I saw that. And then I had another premonition, a girl in Idaho. Her family was hit head-on by a drunk driver. Her husband was killed, and her baby was killed. I knew it was going to be a white car. I told my husband everything. I said, this is going to happen. I was under the covers, shaking, because when you get these premonitions, you feel responsible, but you don't know how to stop it. How do you stop it when you know this? And then it happened a few days later. And so what I basically did is I said, okay, I want some boundaries. I don't want to know this anymore. It's too hard for me. I think it can be an ego thing for some people. I think it may have been that way for me a little bit, and then I had to get really truth with myself. I don't want to know this stuff. You know, sometimes there's stuff that I feel from my sisters or whatever, because, you know, we're so connected. Feel that energy or whatever. I will feel that. If I'm doing a reading for somebody, I don't want to tell them, oh, yeah, your grandfather's going to die. Or, you know what I mean? That's not. I want to give empowerment. What I know now is there's other energy that gets involved, and that's what my Hitting Fear Head-On book goes into. That's one reason why Preston calls it white whispers, because it's pure energy. The energy that was telling me about the premonitions was not pure. That was the key here. That's the key of understanding fear and understanding how it plays with us, and we've got to stop it so we can be empowered and be in the light of God. And you guys are going to think I'm crazy, but that's okay. Preston tells me that. What will happen? Because, you know, this planet is in trouble. We're in big trouble. And so the more that we meditate and the more we pray and the more that we, the less that we judge, is he says we're really the solar panel. We're really our own solar power. We just have to tap into it and believe it and know it's there. And I was blessed because I saw it in the near death. I mean, it was just like bright, huge light. And then he says that we'll give energy transmissions to each other. And we're going to turn people on just like popcorn. So I really have faith that that's what's going to happen, but it takes all of us working together in harmony. Not in this separation anymore. In harmony and unconditional love and love and divinity is what I believe, and that's what Preston shows me. That's the kind of premonition I want.
I'm a near-death experiencer as well, and that door didn't close. And I have a question. Do you have any practices that you use? Because I'll take on everything. It's just like an open door.
Yeah, I know. I understand that.
You know, and I'm also a healer, and which is awesome. And I see things, which is great. But sometimes, and I won't actually know that it's happening when it's happening.
Right.
Sometimes I have the experience of something is terribly wrong, or I'm sick, or you know, and I've taken on other people's stuff, and I'm not. I'm just curious, do you have anything
that you do that too, sweetheart. I do that too.
You have a remedy.
The remedy I have is sovereignty. Do you understand sovereignty?
Yeah.
Okay. It's really, you know, your meditation and anchoring to Mother Earth. Do you anchor to Mother Earth?
I know to, and I don't always.
That's the key.
I know that.
You know, that's the problem, is this planet's been hijacked with Mother Earth, by the way. That's why our wombs have been hijacked, too. Our wombs represent Mother Earth. And so what's happening is we're bringing everything to truth and to balance. Mother Earth is a very, very powerful soul, as we know. And so we want to treat our bodies with reverence and love and dignity, just like we do Mother Earth. And that's also going to help bring the light in. When we anchor to Mother Earth, and what I mean by that is we take a grounding cord and we drop it at our hips. And we imagine, like you can do it with me if you want, you imagine going all the way down and anchoring to her soul, to the core of her earth. And you imagine that. And then you bring cosmos light in, God's light in. And you bring that in the top of your head. And you've got two back channels that go down. And then they come into your womb and they make love within your system. And then they come up. I don't know if you guys have heard of chakras. Anybody heard of chakras? You understand that? Okay, good. So chakras are an energy system that we all have. I won't go into that. It's in my book more. But chakras are an energy system that we all have, and they go up. And so Mother and Father's Earth, they go up our chakras and they clean out. They shower our field. We can bring the energy down and they can shower our hands. We can bring it out our neck and they shower our whole body. So what's happened when Preston was born, I said to my husband, I just want to put him in a plastic bubble. I want to keep him safe. Well, what happens is you go into that plastic bubble. Now, you're still very sensitive in that plastic bubble. So it's about doing the anchoring, and we're sensitive, but to me, whenever anything gets into my space, it's because I have more work to do. That's what I found out. What's this about? Where do I have more work to do? It's an opportunity to go look at myself. So I have that same issue, though. And the other thing, too, is I'm sovereign, I'm God, and I'm free. And this is your free will, and you can own that every day. And that's going to keep other non-beneficial energy out of your space. I'm God, I'm sovereign, I'm free. Because that energy is very trickery and very sneaky.
So I know both you and Biff have medical issues, you know, him with his MS and you with your fibro. You being open and having the near-death experience, do you think that there's a difference, like, with you and Biff? Do you find that he suffers more medically? Or,
now Biff has been parasitic to me. This is what happened. This all happened. I'll tell you what happened 2 years ago. Okay, because this is how we're all parasitic to with each other on some level, because there's been in other lifetimes where that's how we survived. So we kind of have this unconscious going where we parasitic with each other. Okay. So, anyways, Preston 2 years ago came to me and he says, "Mommy, I've got to let you know this." I said, "What?" And he says, "Daddy's sucking off your energy." And I'm like, "What?" You gotta be kidding me. He's like, yeah, he is. He says, we want you to get more in your field. Really get more honed in. We're married now 26 years. You know, it's a norm for us. And Biff's working. I'm on disability. So, you know, I'm probably just giving it to him freely. Oh, sure, take me. You know, I'll sacrifice me. That was probably a role I played way back when. So anyways, I said, okay. So I did my meditation. I got clear in my field. And I'm sovereign. I'm free. I'm God. And I told Biff energetically, no more. No more. Mm-mm. We can't do this because you need to find your own source. I'm not going to be your source anymore. Within 2 months, he had an MS attack. He hadn't had an MS attack for about 15 years. So that MS attack is making him find his own source. And I would call that tough love. But we need to do it so that everybody finds their own source and stays in their own sovereignty and get out of codependency and into interdependence. Because interdependence is what's going to make us sing in harmony. Interdependence.
Okay, I love what you just said, but I've got some brain damage also, and I was wondering, is that in your book?
Yes.
That I can read that again?
Yes, it is.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
There's a lot. You'll like that. There's a lot about my brain damage in my book.
Well, I got carbon monoxide poisoning two years ago, and so I relate to what you're saying. And I've got my sister right next door to me, and she was beat up by her husband, who was drinking and got brain damage. So we relate to what you're saying.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing.
I'm sorry that what you guys have been through, too. Yeah, I really am.
It really helps to hear your story and to know we're not the only ones.
Well, you know, when my brain injury, I was a barber. I used to cut hair, and I cut my husband's hair. You know, when I came out of that coma, you know, and I saw him scalped, and his hair was all screwed up, you know, and all these scars, and I'm coming out of the coma, and the first thing I said to him is, hi, honey, I love you. I says, who in the hell cut your hair? You know, I was pissed, man. He had somebody else cut his hair. I was mad. And then I thought, we were at our house in the hospital room. Why did you decorate our house this way? And I thought the oxygen tank was a clog. And I'm like, why did you pick that out? You know, people don't know. I was in diapers for a month. You know, people have no clue what you go through when you've been hit like this, you know. And I understand being poisoned,
yeah,
and I was too, and I have that issue too.
We're a little bit retarded, but we're not.
We're very right brain
in our brain, but we just can't get it out.
Right, absolutely.
To let you know that we're not.
Right, we have a hard time processing.
I've just enjoyed immeasurably, as all of us, hearing your story.
Thank you.
Just beautiful. And, you know, I was just wondering, these near-death experiences, have they affected your dream states, astral projection, lucid dreaming?
Sometimes I have very vivid dreams, and sometimes I don't. It depends on where my conscience is. So if I'm having fear drive me, they're not very vivid. They're kind of in and out. But when I'm pretty honed in and connected, I get really nice, vivid dreams. I'll just share one with you. We were at our house in Middleton, and now we live up on another hill in Middleton because I love the sunsets because they really are healings for our souls. Biff's outside. He's always outside working the yard, and there's this big mushroom cloud of nuclear energy, and it's just this black, black, yucky energy, and it just starts coming at me. And I said, Biff, get in here. And he gets in here, and I close the door, and it's just all this black tar. And it just slams our windows. Nothing got in. And I'm like, whew, we did it. To me, that was a really good dream. What people don't know about the astral realm is the astral realm is just a projection of us. So below, above, so below. So what's going on in the astral realm is really not that great. And so what happens is a lot of people get caught on the astral realm, and they get themselves into trouble. And I've experienced that with other people that I've worked with. So, and I'll just be honest with you, it's usually sexual energy that they get themselves into trouble.
It's more the fourth dimension.
Yes. Yes, they get caught in it. And then they get caught in addiction and they spin out and they get stuck in it and they can't get out because it's entrapment.
But you know, we're all connected. You know?
Right.
The unified field of consciousness. And, you know, people just don't realize how close and connected we are.
Right.
But there's more space than matter.
Right.
And within the space, information travels.
Absolutely.
And divinity,
right,
gives us that information.
Right. So when we don't judge, what happens is that just causes space. So judgment is something that gets in the way. So when we don't judge and we open it up, that's when the universe can travel in, and it's magic. I mean, it really is miracles. I see miracles work over and over and over again. See, with Preston, if I would have moved out of the way, I swear he'd be alive today.
And it constricts us.
It does, absolutely.
Lori, I just want to thank you for your authenticity and speaking from your heart.
Thank you.
And also just encourage all of those who have agreed or committed to helping with that shift and breaking barriers and pre-programming and just helping people out of some of the paradigms. So thank you for being willing to speak on that level.
Yes.
Also, we kind of moved on a little bit in the subject, but you were talking about premonitions, and you know, I've been through a lot of different stages, but I kind of wanted to ask a little bit of just kind of advice about that. You're touching on a couple of things, and it sounds like I might need to read your book, but just kind of a two-part question. I'll try to keep it a little bit concise. You had mentioned that the premonitions that you were receiving, and sometimes it almost got to a point where it became burdensome. I mean,
right.
That's probably not how you put it, but...
overwhelming.
Yeah, overwhelming, and what do you do with this information? I think I've been through those stages as well, maybe not quite as global or anything, but sometimes I still receive information like that, and sometimes I look at it as a tender mercy or a warning sign, and I think, well, things are still going to happen. I can't do anything to prevent it by knowing it. What do I look at it like? Just a road sign of be prepared and be cautious?
Or... But now what it is, again, is it's an opportunity to use our heart intelligence. Preston will have me now. He'll say, Mom, we need you to meditate. This is what the other side is telling you to do when a premonition comes in. You need to meditate, anchor your energy, open your heart so that our energy can come in. Because what will happen is when their energy can come in, God's energy can come in, the catastrophe is not going to be as harsh. So when you get the premonition, ground your energy, get into your sovereignty, open your heart, and just allow them to intervene and just say it's none of your business. Whatever happens is none of your business. That way you stay in your sovereignty. You're just a messenger and you're a vestal. You know, we are an instrument, and that's really all we are an instrument.
And then just the other part to that same thing is even just premonitions for my own life, even if it's not something that's, I mean, I get information about other people, and sometimes I'm just like, I don't know what to do with that. Sometimes I do, and sometimes I don't. But for the past couple of years, I get like a constant warning of like something coming ahead, and I just think, what do I do with that? Because it still happens. Is it just something like you're saying, just sit down, sovereignty, tune in?
Right. So what happens is that's an energy feed. I see a lot of different energy out there. There's a dark matrix going on, and there's a light matrix going on. But we don't have to be in either one. We can be above both of them, and it feeds the light matrix. When we're in the dark matrix and we're in fear or insecurity or anger or whatever lower vibration, it's feeding the dark matrix. What has happened, you just say, it's none of my business, and you open up your heart and say, no, get out of my space, I'm not buying it, and you own your power to it.
Well, it's not always negative.
Right, and if it's not negative, then be with it and empower with it.
Thank you for the information, now what do I do with it?
If somebody's asking you for the information, then give it to them. But if they're not asking for it, don't give it to them. That's my boundary.
I meant with for myself.
If it's empowering, yes, take it in and fly with it then. That's beautiful if you get positive information. See God's energy is only empowering energy. It's empowering, it's beautiful energy. And that's what I am trying to get across in my book. It's empowering energy, this other energy that's came on this planet and has hijacked us on some level, isn't beneficial energy. And so when you've got this empowerment, just like Preston's message, you know, that's beautiful. That's gonna help a lot of people. It's gonna open up the heart. So anytime you got an open heart message, yeah, definitely run with it.
I'm talking more about like the warnings.
The warnings?
Warnings, yeah. Warnings.
Like something bad's going to happen or good?
Or just something's coming ahead, like the premonitions of warnings. I mean, how the premonitions...
Then ground it. Ground that energy and still tell them to get out of your space. Because what it is you can say thank you, but what we do is an energy system, we internalize the energy and we carry it. And then we become a hologram for that energy because we're carrying that energy. But when you can say thank you, now get out of my space, they can't plug into you. But when you carry it and think, oh gosh, this is scary, what are we going to do? They've plugged into you. So you don't plug into it anymore. Yeah, don't feed off the fear. Absolutely.
I just wanted to share so much. Heaven is so close to us. And I'm so grateful for the things you shared. All of us have had ones that have left this life to let you know they are so close.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us are very sensitive and can hear them by words.
Right.
Some of us can feel them. And to know that our ancestors and our loved ones are so close, they're helping us in our life.
Absolutely.
And when you have an impression in your life, warnings or a dream or a vision, it's because it's a message for you. And write it down. Write it down in a journal.
Right.
And you'll be inspired what you're supposed to do with that inspiration. Because, for example, I knew with the economy happening, or I knew we were going to lose a home, or there was something that was going to happen, I'd have dreams. And when those dreams come, those are personal warnings because a loving Heavenly Father wants us to be prepared, not be in fear,
right,
and be able to handle the experiences we're going
right.
through.
Right.
I have also lost my mother 2 years ago to lung cancer. And I'm so grateful she has taught me in so many ways how close she is. And as we're approaching October, she wanted to share with me how close she is. So on Halloween night, wasn't even thinking about her, I go to a door with my little boy, and they didn't pass out candy, but they passed out something unusual. My mother is named Beth, and I don't usually see this in the world on a box, but what they handed out at the door was a box of cookies. And I looked a little closer, and it read, Beth's Original Heavenly Chocolate Chip Cookies.
That's beautiful. Thank you. That's so a good note to close on. That's great. Thank you, sweetheart, for sharing that. And that is true, just to go back to the energy, too. When we get the messages, too, it's about sustaining in our energy. And the more we anchor, we're more sustained. The more we're in our sovereignty, the more we're sustained. We're more in the bubble. And I went to the Middle East in 2010 by myself to see how sustained I was in my energy field, and I did a really good job. That was a whole other story, though. So thank you, everybody.